For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Political commentator and investigative journalist, you're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good afternoon, listeners in Europe. You're not with Patrick Henningsen this afternoon. You're with Basil Valentine sitting in for Patrick, who's on his travels. He'll be back with us very, very soon. In fact, he's going to be joining us in about 10 minutes or so. But I'm very pleased to say that for the time being, I'm joined by my guest, Christian James. Hello again, Christian.
Hi, good afternoon again. So here we are one more time after the news.
Here we are one more time. I just wanted to say that before we got cut off at the top of the hour about the whole control mechanism, that one cannot fully understand what is going on in the world today if you're not aware of the fact that Western societies, I mean, one could say arguably the entire globe, but, you know, European, American, industrialized nations are every bit as heavily propagandized now, if not more so, because propaganda has become more subtle with the advent of neuro-linguistic programming and, you know, greater understanding of these things, more heavily propagandized than were the societies of Soviet Russia or Nazi Germany. You need to be aware of that to understand why our politics, our war footing, our society is as it is.
I mean, we've seen over the last, like, maybe 15 years now, a definitive, you know, all of the corporate speak has always been about change, common purpose, this whole goal towards, you know, future leaders, visions, and so on, all led down linguistic programming, like you said there, and towards a common narrative, a common future. And we're seeing that now. Those people have now got into those positions of power. Those people are now the ones making choices. And that, I do not believe, is by accident. Those people have been placed into these positions to, you know, to lead us down a certain path. And that path appears to be this technocracy that appears to be coming into fruition now. But it's now such a point that it's almost impossible not to notice this control grid that has been set up. And everyone knows it.
Yes.
And they're looking at it and going, oh, yeah, we can see what's coming. And I don't think people know what to do with it because it appears to be overpowering them. But if you have a one-to-one conversation with anyone, they're very much aware of at least an aspect of it. And it already makes them uncomfortable to have that conversation because they know what it means.
Yes, I mean, the aim of the propaganda machine is to reinforce the idea that this biosecurity state, technocracy, all the various control elements that are being assembled are nevertheless somehow still benign. So we often hear, you know, words like safety and security, you know, and as you said, common good being used in association with it. You know, this is, it's for your own good that, that all these things are happening. And a lot of people are that sufficiently brainwashed to believe that it is for their own good, you know. Those plus, of course, as I said before, those who actually like being controlled mean that, you know, there is a sizable chunk of the population that think this is all fine, just go along with it, you know, and don't really ask any sort of deeper questions, you know. So where the numbers are is, in, you know, in terms of total population split as to those who are going to sort of simply, like sheep, walk slowly into the abattoir, and those of us who are going to put up some or staunch resistance, is very hard to say. Suffice to say, last few years, an awful lot more people have begun to realize that there's something wrong with the picture, that we no longer have a society at ease with itself. We have a society where people are, unfortunately, very often afraid to speak their mind for fear of condemnation or censure, or losing their job because they've said the wrong thing, or because they put their hand on someone's knee 15 years ago, or because they expressed the wrong sentiment in a tweet.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know about you. Have you had to go back over your tweets just to make sure?
No, I haven't. I stand by every tweet I've ever tweeted.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I can see that Patrick's going to be joining us at 4:15, but I wanted to run an important story by you that I'm really great to have his input on. So, So the government this week has made a Emergency Authorization Act regarding banned pesticides on bees, the neonicotinoids that we thought had been stopped years ago. So the government has given emergency authorization for this type of pesticide to be used on sugar beet and a number of other plants across the UK. So there's been a lot of investigations into what it happens. DEFRA said that it'll be like strict conditions in place and the pesticide treatment that is going to be used on them. It's going to be unlimited. It's going to be minimalist risks. However, it turns out I did a bit of a digging. So Greenpeace did a... one of their investigation, their unearthed series, as it were, they, for the last 4 years, the UK not only has been using neonicotinoids, and a rather number of them, but has actually been selling them to other countries as part of an investigation they did across the EU to other countries, particularly South Africa, particularly Ghana, across the ocean to South America. So all those vast amounts of storage we have from the chemical creations of these neonicotinoids and their various guises, we've actually been happily exporting them around the world while claiming that we don't use them here and actually have been using them here, because they've actually been every year, the last 3 years, we've actually been using them on those sugar beets to keep the insects at bay. There is unfortunately a terrible virus that's causing effects to the sugar beet and the plants, which is the reason why they're having to use this pesticide. However, of course, its detrimental effects that's hitting the local ecosystem is definitely to be felt. I didn't see barely any bees last year at all, I admit, and I live next to woodland. I didn't see any at all, and I kind of wonder if that's going to go down. I barely see any insects in general. There's birds, which is what I kind of tagged on earlier, the death of birds. You know, that's a worrying thing. The food chain is being damaged. Is that intentional in regards to other things, such as our food supply being told to be brought down? You know, are we seeing these things that are coalescing with each other or running in parallel to the same end? I don't know, but terrible. What's going ahead?
Yes, it's another of these. The bee situation is another of these seemingly sort of existential threats, which people don't seem to be taking seriously. All we hear about is climate change, which I don't regard as an existential threat at all. I mean, all sorts of things are being attributed to climate change, which couldn't possibly be the result of any difference in the weather, you know, because people quite happily live in parts of the world that are a lot warmer than Europe at the moment, and yet somehow tiny average changes are supposed to make a big difference. On the other hand, if it hasn't already started, we're on the brink of World War III, which could go nuclear, meaning that we're all dead. And of course, as you say, things, you know, no bees, no food, we're all dead very, very quickly. So I find it also extremely alarming that any government would be so short-sighted and so just dunderheaded as to approve the use of a chemical which is, you know, so obviously and well known and linked to such a disastrous outcome. You know, I mean, what on earth is the official justification for it, Christian?
So Mark Spencer, who is the farmer minister, he said that careful consideration and a necessary measure to protect the industry in regards to our food growth in the UK. Again, mainly talking about sugar beet from the fens where they're planted in general.
Which isn't hasn't in the past been a particularly important crop in the UK.
No, I don't think so.
There's masses of sugar, there's plenty of sugar in the world we can import, you know.
I'm sure there is. So Friends of the Earth saying it's incredibly brazen. It appears that the government is going against its own scientific advice, and the devastating consequences for vital pollinators such as bees is well known. And here we are doing it. We're shipping stuff off to Bali. Oddly enough, the Ukraine is on that list too, where we're supplying them with the neonicotinoids over there, Pakistan, Brazil. So we don't have a problem with shipping them overseas or using them ourselves, regardless of what we say in public.
And obviously those countries to which we export them seem to be quite happy to use them.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, this is more of this incredibly short-term thinking that unfortunately pervades what passes for a political class these days. You know, I am reminded once again of how impoverished we are by our leadership.
They appear to have no real idea, and I guess a lot of them are driven by think tanks, by advisors, and I guess those advisors are generally getting their funds and advice from said companies themselves, whether that be shared stakeholders. And so it's always in their best interest, and all a politician has to say is, yes, okay, I'll take the 30 grand over there, thank you very much.
That's right, that, of course, and the revolving door between government ministries and well-paid jobs in the private sector. You know, as soon as you leave, you get, you're usually sort of well rewarded by directorship of one of these companies or something. We're going to take another break. This is Basil Valentine sitting in for Patrick Henningsen. I'm joined by Christian James, who's going to stay on the line, and after the break, Patrick himself will be joining us. This is TNT, today's news talk. Don't go away, and we'll see you right after this break.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
What's going on in Brazil with Lula da Silva? Who is this guy? Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Is he a socialist? Well, just another fascist in waiting and wanting media attention. We've explained a lot of the parts and pieces, the backgrounds of some of the people involved. And it sounds very, very expansive, but it actually boils down to very small groups of people. You don't want lots of people to know what's going on in this operation that are involved, unless they've got something to lose. Now, what you're going to see is, yes, there was a Joe Biden involvement, Hunter Biden involvement, Barack Obama, all these people. And this is one leg, one segment in what's going on today. This is the actual financing behind globalization, how they're going about it. See, the money has to come from somewhere. And why not take it from the governments you want to impoverish?
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Patrick Henningsen does indeed talk, but this isn't him talking right now. He's going to be joining us in a moment. I'm Basil Valentine, sitting in for Patrick this afternoon on today's News Talk, TNT. I've also got my good friend and colleague, Christian James, on the line. But before I go to either of them, a story has come up which I just want to get out of the way. It's a little bit of trivia almost that might put a bit of smile on your face. Divisions have emerged, it appears, in Camp Sussex as Prince Harry's vicious piece of work, that is to say his autobiography, his memoir, Spare, has backfired. In the United States, the popularity of Harry and Meghan has fallen significantly, says Royal Watcher Niall Gardner. I think the British public have turned Harry really into a pariah as a result of this very nasty book, which his wife also appears to disagree with. I do think Harry and Meghan definitely underestimated the level of backlash there was going to be. And the book has been described as a disaster. in terms of the image of Harry and Meghan, to the extent that the breaking news is that it appears Harry may not be at the coronation, which would be extraordinary for the, you know, the Charles has only two sons. One is the heir to the throne, Prince William. Harry is the other one. He couldn't be any closer. So for him to sit it out, and apparently he's lined up to commentate on American television on it instead. This is unbelievable. This will have the royal watchers and the protocol experts scurrying for cover. That the king's own offspring should issue a place in the procession and the abbey and all the rest of it in favor of commentating on American television. Well, I mean, this is off the charts. So I just thought that little vignette might bring a smile to your face wherever you are, a wry smile. I mean, the soap opera goes on, and it is what the royal family thrive on. They need these stories in order to remain relevant, but this is one that I shouldn't think they're particularly pleased about. Are you able to join us, Patrick Henningsen?
Yes, indeed. Can you hear me okay, Basil?
Absolutely fine.
I can't help but comment on your last story there. One does draw comparisons to the other spare, the forerunner, Prince Margaret, who occupied a sort of an odd position in the pecking order, but and was her scandals and shenanigans were the source of much public entertainment and speculation at the time. But this is a whole other level.
Oh, yes. I mean, Margaret and the Queen always remained close, though, of course, the tragedy of Margaret's life really was that she wasn't allowed to marry Group Captain Peter Townsend, I think it was, who'd been an equerry, effectively a servant, because he was divorced, I think, and also just too you know, not the right class, not quite classy enough, even though he's an RAF officer. I mean, of course, that was more than half a century ago. And how times have changed, put it that way. Princess Margaret ended up marrying the photographer Tony Snowden, had two children, and I don't think it would be unfair to say drank herself into an early grave. But you're right, the second in line at birth to the throne, who is then shunted effectively out of the line by the heir to the throne's offspring. It's a very, very strange position to be in, of course. And the same applies to the next generation in the shape of the Duke of York, Randy Andy himself, I should think he's rather pleased by all this because it takes the spotlight off him. And this comes as it's been announced, or rather it's been leaked, that King Charles has kicked him out of Buckingham Palace, that he no longer has a suite of rooms exclusively for his own use there, right in the heart of London.
Yeah, that's Harry's the gift that keeps on giving. Isn't he, Basil, there too? What a great distraction from the whole Epstein scandal and Prince Andrew bringing shame to the family, etc.
Yes, yes, exactly. He'll be absolutely rubbing his hands saying, you know, I'm a choir boy compared to your son, Charlie, you know. And Charles himself, to be honest, must be rueing the fact that he has both a wayward brother and a wayward son. Moving swiftly on from what is effectively tittle-tattle, did you want to pick up on any of the things that I've been talking about with Christian, or Christian, for that matter, do you have any comment on the royal shenanigans?
I like the way you said royal shenanigans. I was going to say it's like watching a wrestling show or watching a soap opera, the drama that's going on there. I happen to you ever seen that there's a bookshop in the UK called The Works, and The Works effectively they sell books that are no longer on the main bookshelf. So when they come off the charts at the supermarkets and all the bookshops, The Works tends to sell the back catalogue. And I happened to notice there was an awful lot of books of Spare at The Works, and I walked past yesterday. And Waterstones have taken the Spare away out of their front windows, and it now occupies just a small podium on the inside when I went to Waterstones at the weekend. So yeah, I think the book has brought great shame to potentially the conversation about royals. People over here look at the royal family as a kind of, they're not an institution, they're a tradition. And I guess worldwide they are seen as a powerful icon. But I guess the Harry thing kind of makes it look like it's an American reality soap drama. And people, I think, have stopped watching the reality shows of like the world of Real Housewives and so on. And I don't think they're paying much attention. But Netflix clearly paid them a lot of money, and the book hasn't done well. And it'll be interesting to see what actually comes of his interesting first-hand commentary of this. But it is a shame that he's not going to be attending his father's coronation. That does seem rather odd.
Yeah, Patrick, yeah, anything you want to add?
It's just how can that stand? You know,
it's off the charts, isn't it?
It's just unbelievable. I really can't see how that. I mean, because history will look back at that. There'll be an empty place, and that's it. That's legacy. So this is a serious rift, and it's not a good look for the country. It's not a good look for the constitutional monarchy. This is, of course, the official form of government of Britain. So to have this fractured royal family, it's not a good look. I dare say. This could be a very unwelcome omen for the institution going forward, if you catch my drift, Basil.
Yeah. Yeah. The monarchy has to represent continuity, decorum, a certain way of doing things that sets an example to the rest of the country. And if it doesn't provide that function, then what on earth is the purpose of it? If it's every bit as dysfunctional, if not more so, than the average family, except that it lives in this whole collection of gilded cages, but the standards of behavior and the relationships between the members are as awful as anything you would find on a council estate, then people may decide sooner rather than later that they've had enough of the whole pantomime.
Yes, indeed. So I noticed W.H. Smith had sort of 20% off vouchers already ready 2 weeks ago for Spare. So I'll stack of them on the counter there. I guess if you purchased above £20, you got a discount on the new book. So it had a Harry's mug on it. It seemed like they were just anticipating poor sales, that they'd have to try hard to shift the product. It's not a good look. It's probably going to sell less. The only book that they had to work harder to sell was Barack Obama's memoirs, which was about 1,000 pages long, and you could use for a child at a dinner table to boost the height of their seat.
Yeah.
But other than that, a lethal weapon if you threw it across the room. But nobody was interested in it. They tried hard in Britain to sell that. Nobody bought it.
Have you tackled it, Patrick? Go on, Christian.
I was just going to say that how the there's the hypocrisy effectively of the Meghan Harry matter, where they wanted to get out of the limelight, they wanted to stay out of the matter, yet signed the $100 million deal with Netflix. They wrote this book. I'm assuming it's a ghostwriter who's put this together. They've gone, hell for leather in terms of on television reality shows. And now we have effectively the ultimate reality show, the coronation. you know, they appear to be very much in the limelight. I mean, the Netflix show itself, they if you can remember those trailers that they were putting out, and they were instantly debunked as the kind of things that they were claimed were going on, never were. There was never any real interest in driving it. It makes you wonder what is interesting about it. And I think, like you said it there, it's nothing more than the dysfunctional family on an average, you know, an average life, really, having just terrible things happen or good things happen. And they're just like a normal family, aren't they now?
I wouldn't go that far. I don't think they regard themselves as a normal family at all. We tend to forget, you know, the thing with the monarchy really is in the UK is that it is ultimately an anachronism. We are moving away from the hereditary principle. We're all supposed to embrace equity, diversity, inclusion, and all the rest of it. And yet, right at the heart of the British Constitution, right at the heart of the whole British class structure, you have this one family who people literally, you know, you literally have to bow to. You know, you're sounded out before you meet the king or queen or whoever as to whether or not you will bow. If you won't bow, if you don't agree to bow in advance, then you know, you're not meeting the king. Do you know what I mean? They rely on protocol. It'll be interesting to see at the coronation the extent to which the medieval language about the divine right of kings and how Charles takes his authority from King Solomon and God and all the rest of it, how much of that is retained, because they are going to modify the religious service in the abbey to some extent. So it'd be very interesting to see what words come out of our ultra woke Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. We're getting 3 days off, an extra bank holiday on the Monday, but I'm doubtful that there's going to be as much. Well, there certainly won't be the uniform enthusiasm that there was for the Queen's coronation in 1952, which came at a particularly good time for the monarchy after the years of austerity after the war. You had this wonderful, you know, golden, multicolour royal pageant right in the heart of London, and attractive young new monarch, and you know, everybody thought it was fantastic. It was a big shot in the arm for the monarchy. Charles has always had his detractors, not just because some people question what went on with the mother of his children, but also his funny opinions about things, his regular attendance at the World Economic Forum. And he's never been as popular as his mother. A lot of people said they owed their allegiance to the Queen rather than to the institution of monarchy. And Charles has got his work cut out to sort of establish himself as a princeling, but as a king with an identity in his own right.
Yeah, there's other matters to follow as well. So I wonder whether we'll see a... Yeah, there was the adoration of Isis, where the Queen had her second birthday. Will Charles also follow such a thing, where he'll be reborn again as a god? I wonder whether they'll follow that kind of thing from the occult.
Yes, that ritual, particularly interesting. They're sort of Masonic related, these rituals, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And I kind of wonder, well, because I believe, is Charles not head of Freemasonry in the UK presently?
No, it's his cousin, the Duke of Kent. Actually, his uncle, I think. I think literally his second cousin or something. The Duke of Kent was the Queen's first cousin, who is the who's the head of Freemasonry. The Duke of Kent, of course, is the son of Prince Henry of Kent, who was George V's brother. Okay. So the Queen's grandfather, his brother, George V, offspring, grandson, Duke of Kent.
I got you. Yeah.
Interestingly, the Duke of Kent's mother is a royal. She's from the Danish royal household. Long since dead, of course. So I've sometimes wondered whether this is reflected in the Masonic hierarchy. So in terms of birth, because he is, both of his parents were actually royals, whereas the Queen's mother although a lady in her own right was technically a commoner, the Queen Mother, the Duke of Kent is of higher birth than the Queen. Not a lot of people know that. Yeah.
No, I see that. And I wonder whether the they will follow through with like using the Scone Castle up in Scotland, why they heal, because all the kings have all been coronated there, and obviously the Queen wasn't. But I wonder whether they'll still do that.
Yes, for all his talking to plants and his environmental credentials, Charles is nevertheless, you know, quite a traditionalist when it comes to all this royal ritual and protocol. So I expect he will retain most of it. Patrick, do you, I hope you're not in a tunnel. Can you jump in at this point?
Yeah, just on the issue of Egyptian rituals, and also, you know, and a nod to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Did you happen to catch this week? The British Museum has banned the use of the word mummy because Central Party's Committee on Cultural Appropriation deemed it to be offensive for the 3,000-year-old pharaohs who are entombed in glass or, in King's Cross or Russell Square. And I thought that was interesting. So what do you make of that?
I thought it must be a parody, you know. I mean, does this mean they're going to have to retitle the film The Mummy, The Mummy's Curse and all the rest of it, The Mummy's Tomb, you know? I thought this was a total joke. How can you possibly offend a 3,000-year-old corpse? Absolute nonsense. I mean, we all know that they're sarcophaguses, that they have other terms, but, you know, mummy is a... I mean, you could say that, more likely the other way around, really, that that the use of the word mummy in referring to corpses is denigrating to the slang term for a mother. You know, we used to call our mother mummy, other people just mum. In America, of course, it's mom. For some strange reason, you could say there's a problem there, but it's all total nonsense. It's just bizarre. It's people trying to justify their salaries at the British Museum. It shouldn't really be given any credence at all. I mean, I think that's the answer with a lot of this nonsense, is that you just ignore it completely.
I think the name change is going to cost the taxpayers a few million. By the time they're done with all the reprinting. Oh, yeah, it's going to cost money. Got to strike that out of encyclopedias and booklets and redo signage, and they probably have to hire a PR company to do it, probably somebody who's related to somebody in a ministerial position, no doubt. But, so it's going to cost a bit of money. And, no word, though, about returning all this imperial booty back to Egypt, which is interesting for the woke crowd, don't you think?
No, that's right. Or the Elgin marbles or any of it. Most of it's going to stay in the British Museum. You know, I don't have any particularly strong feelings either way, except that once you start returning these things, there's literally no end to it. And that's why the British Museum oppose it so much, because they realize as soon as they give one thing back, they've got to give back everything in the museum back.
Yeah. I think they should try to flip it on eBay. What do you think? Like, open it up to the market, to the world, on eBay? It'd be good for eBay.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. I mean, so I'm trying to figure out, so what is it that's offensive? Is it the fact that we're using a feminine term, and obviously in our current, you know, trans issue, you know, gender identity, is that what the issue is of it being called mummy? Or is it actually that the term mummy is an offensive word to identify a corpse? I don't know. Where does the word actually originate? Is it an Egyptian term, or was it a slang term that we gave corpses? I don't know.
It's a derivative of mummified, I believe. I think mummy is. Am I right, Aswell, on that? You're the
absolutely. Word. Yes. Yeah.
I was just saying, like you mentioned there, they're going to have to rename all those classic movies that we all loved growing up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm particularly fond of the Hammer series. I think Christopher Lee appears as the mummy in a tremendous production. While we're on the subject of the crazy world in which we now live, where up is down and left is right, of course, there's been a lot of attention this week on the case of a certain Isla Bryson, formerly known as Adam Graham, from Clydebank in West Dunbartonshire, who has been convicted of 2 counts of rape, who is in the process of transitioning into a woman, and was due to be remanded in a woman's prison, even though she still has a male member. However, her wife has come out today and said that she is simply trying to scam the courts and that the transition is a sham. We'll have more on that story and other stories after the break. I'm Basil Valentine, sitting in for Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk TNT, and we'll be right back after these messages.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Well, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is we have survived yet another day on planet Earth of catastrophic global warming because of man. Now, that's the good news. We're all still alive, at least if you're hearing this. I assume you're alive. The bad news, of course, is that according to this crowd, tomorrow is coming, and then the day after tomorrow, and then the day after tomorrow, and each day is getting warmer, and we're more perilous. Now, when was the last time we had a warm month in Australia? Well, that's interesting. Looks like back in April or May, we had a little bit warmer than normal. But what of Africa? Anybody look at Africa? They've been cooler than normal. Now, as far as Australia goes, well, warn folks in Australia, we are about to flip this La Nina to El Nino. And that means that things are going to be considerably drier and considerably warmer. So with all this cool weather that Australia's had, I realize you've been out of the climate spotlight for a while. Rest assured, you'll probably be in it again quite soon. The good news is, of course, that if you're back in it soon, we're still all surviving. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
The bushfire was so unpredictable, it was important to have a plan.
We stayed up to date with our phones and the radio. We knew it was coming.
I never thought it would actually happen. I'm glad we had a plan.
You have to prepare your property and your family.
Always had a plan.
We can all be bushfire ready. Do your 5-minute bushfire plan today.
With a compelling perspective on global politics, this is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is indeed the Patrick Henningsen Show, and this is indeed Basil Valentine sitting in for Patrick. Though Patrick, I'm pleased to say, is joining us on the line on his travels, and I'm very keen to get his perspective on this latest piece of, you know, nonsensory, really, which was that transgender rapist, now masquerading as Isla Bryson, who was due to be sent to a women's prison. It seems that the First Minister of Scotland, Jeanette Cranky, also known as Nicola Sturgeon, has said that this person will not be imprisoned in Scotland's all-female Cornton Vale. Which is interesting because this is a total contradiction of the legislation Sturgeon herself is trying to push through the Scottish Parliament, and which has to date been vetoed by Westminster, which says that you can self-identify as a member of the opposite sex without any form of formal or medical gender reassignment after as short as 3 months. So, Patrick, by the summer you could be Patricia. And heaven forbid, there is a very serious side to this, and this is the serious side, which is that this individual was very, very close to being held in a in an a convicted rapist still in possession of all his male equipment, being housed in a women's prison. What a nonsense!
I mean, it's getting confusing now. Even when you're commenting on these stories, I sort of don't like to even gender them as female. I just say it's the bloke that believes he's a woman, and then use the new name, the adopted name or whatever. But I can't call Leah Thomas, for instance, the bloke, the 6'3" bloke with the big shoulders who won the NCAA Women's Swimming Championship. I can't say she or her, but the mainstream media do all the time. I'll just say Leah Thomas.
Oh, they do, yes.
And if I want to gender Leah Thomas, I'll say, Leah Thomas believes he's a woman. It's as simple as that. And it's like, yes. Kari Jackson, who we've had on the show, she's an activist in Norway. She's on the front line of this campaign. They're arresting people for misgendering now in Norway. Wow. Female feminists, old school lefty feminists, are getting indicted. We had one on the Sunday Wire before Christmas. Is just shocking, you know. So Kari said, "Don't gender them. Don't use a female gender because you're just feeding into the problem." And I have to agree with her. So I'm making a concerted effort to try to keep it a little more reality.
Yes.
Jordan Peterson's protest a couple of years ago. But yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that they have First Minister's questions on a Thursday today, and Sturgeon was repeatedly pressed by the Scottish Conservative leader, Douglas Ross, and she agreed, apparently, that it is not possible to have a rapist incarcerated within a female prison. I mean, that needs stating overtly is indicative of just how deep down this particular rabbit hole we've gone.
It's a corruption. It's a fundamental corruption is what it is. And they're giving it succor, even in this controversy that you're talking about here. They're still giving the whole thing succor by kind of playing along with the pantomime. And it's getting ridiculous. So it's a bloke. What they used to use the word tranny. Remember back in the old days? Remember
yes.
Tranny?
And yes.
What was, at least you know what a tranny is. It's a bloke with the women's clothes. But now it's been formalized and given status. You know, it's a her and it's a she and it's a they, them and all the rest of it. It's just unbelievable how this has crept up and took us all by surprise. Most people laughed it off for years. But the people pushing it took it very seriously. They mobilized, very radical, very loud, and very, very forceful as a lobby. And everyone's scared to death in politics of being brigaded by these people. And corporations are scared as well. It's a very tiny minority that's doing the brigading. It's amazing.
Yes, exactly, and with increasing vehemence and violence on occasions as well, certainly threats of violence against people like J.K. Rowling. So a couple of points I want to pick up on this. First of all, years ago, I'm talking a long time ago, 40 years ago, when transsexuality was even more of a minority thing, there was a problem with male-to-female transsexuals who had gone through full gender reassignment, right? So years of hormones and the surgery, post-op, as it was known, post-op transsexuals, about post-op transsexuals being housed in men's prisons because their birth certificate said they were men and therefore they had to go to a men's prison. But that applied to post-op transsexuals only, as being a controversial thing, and there was a campaign for post-op transsexuals to be allowed to be housed in women's prisons, and I'm not opposed to that. I think if you've had it all whipped off, you know, and you've lived as a woman for, you know, many, many years, and you commit an offence as a woman, presenting as a woman, as it were, you can go to the women's prison. But this self-identification whereby you only have to spend 3 months masquerading as a member of the opposite sex while doing nothing biological or medical to change your sex is a total nonsense. 100% nonsense. And as this person's wife said, she is simply trying to scram the courts. Christian, anything you want to add?
Yes, I've been reading this story actually here. It says that what we have is obviously a predatory male. Obviously, he only became female after was arrested by police. So the wife there is perhaps correctly saying is that he's doing it just to scam the system. So he was housed at one prison, but he's now they got moved on Thursday to a male prison. And of course, they are dressed in women's outfits and regalia. So it'll be interesting to see how an all-male prison of essentially violent sex criminals will adapt to having a person walking around dressed as a woman for this person to continue their masquerade, as it were. What kind of reaction will they receive or a reception will they get when they turn up dressed as the way they are?
Well, Sharon Davis, the British former Olympic swimmer, silver medalist, I think, about 20 years ago, who quite understandably says that the introduction of male to female transsexuals in women's sport marks the end of competitive sport for people born with ovaries. She made the suggestion that, you know, why not have a wing specifically dedicated to male to female transsexuals? Just, you've got your own place there. That would seem to be the logical conclusion to this, you know, where they can't do any harm. But of course, the subtext to what Sturgeon is saying here, she's agreed that it's, Sturgeon has said today, believe it or not, you know, common sense, it's not possible to have a rapist incarcerated in a female prison. But what she hasn't said is that it's perfectly possible, particularly under her new legislation, to have men masquerading as women convicted of other offences incarcerated in women's prisons. So you can be a fraudster, a burglar, violent offences. What about sexual assault without going to full rape? What about assault and battery? What about GBH? What about if you're a man convicted of GBH and you then decide to masquerade as a woman for a few months prior to sentencing so that you can go to a women's prison? You know, so this is the thin end of the wedge. And I think Sturgeon, because there was such uproar about this, Sturgeon is going to find her whole self-identification policy, which was vetoed by Westminster, starting to unravel. What do you think, Patrick? I think Patrick might be in a tunnel. So back to you, Christian, for some comment.
Oh, really? I mean, I think we're going to see, like, Nicola Sturgeon, obviously this U-turn is going to have to happen. It would be really intriguing to see what the Twitter sphere and the TikTok generation will be talking about in regards to this. Will they be siding with the lady that is now Isla? How will they be discussing this? Because I bet actually this individual will now get potentially a lot of support from that community who believe that or she now is a woman. And I'm assuming this will create a lot of controversy. A great divide might well happen here over this very case, because it now has become so, the media has run with the story. You know, we're now talking about the First Minister of Scotland talking about it. Her whole act on this is now going to be, again, up for debate again, opening this bag of worms back up to the public scrutiny. So it'll be interesting to see where the cards lie with this one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's taken a sort of an extreme case like this to illustrate the idiocy of the present situation. And it is to be hoped that, you know, some greater sanity prevails, you know, in the coming months. You know, that's all I can say. Now, I've kept you much longer than I should have done, Christian, but nevertheless, I doubt we've made it through your stack of stories. So have you got anything else lined up you want to share with us?
They were the ones that were tickling me most. Let me just go back to my notes here and see what Asha has on my flow. Actually, there was a really interesting one, actually, that I haven't discussed as yet. So my local city, I don't know if you probably have it down where you live. So the local city council sends emails out, like newsletters and so on. So my local city council sent me an email saying that they are taking on board 215 new sensors across the city in order to better understand congestion on the roads, make journeys quicker and easier. But it's going to be ruled and controlled by AI. So these sensors, so basically they'll have zones of the city what will be locked out, bollards up, that'll be entirely automated as a way of easing congestion around the city in Nottingham's goal to become carbon neutral by 2028. So I found out who this company was. They're a company called Viva City, and they are funded by the World Economic Forum, and they have a number of future transport zones planned out across 27 cities across the UK presently. So the idea is you'll have now an artificial intelligence controlling the traffic systems and making decisions in real time with no human making an interaction upon that. So that's not just for Nottingham, that's for a large number of cities across the country. I wondered what your thoughts were upon something such as that.
Christian, well, I've seen... do you think that Christian, do you think that if you do all that, if you do what Schwab tells you, everybody in Nottingham, that that will change the weather?
Maybe. And is that then to say that weather manipulation is possible?
Oh, man. I saw a picture on Twitter today of huge sort of planters, you know, about 2.5 feet, 3 feet square, 3 or 4 feet high, filled with soil and probably rocks at the bottom to make them enormously heavy. And there were three of these things in a row across a suburban road in Bath. And 50 feet further on, there were another three, making it impossible for cars, of course, to travel between the two. And as we know, in Oxford, they're trying to divide the city up into these 15-minute zones. This is something that was on the agenda at Davos last week, all part of the attempt to get people out of cars, to end private car ownership, if it's all possible, and to restrict people's liberties. But I'm pleased to say there's considerable pushback against it. And where they've started to erect some of this street furniture, which, of course, was widely opposed by the public in consultation, people have started smashing it up. And we've also got in London the extension of the so-called ULEZ zones, which means that right out into outer London, which means that a lot of people will be charged £15 simply for moving their car off their driveway before they've gone anywhere at all if their car is particularly old. I mean, you know, Khan has come under heavy criticism for it, of course, but at the moment he shows no sign of backing down. He's got to be voted out. It's as simple as that. Everybody who supports all this stuff's got to be voted out immediately. Patrick, anything you want to add? We've lost him again. He's on his way to London, and I think he's on one of the many north down tunnels between Brighton and London. A couple of stories I want to finish with, Christian. You're free to comment. We've only got literally a minute and a half yet left. I want to mention these every time I host because they're rolling stories that we should never ignore. One, of course, is Julian Assange. I learned this week that the Australian Prime Minister Albanese has had no contact with the United States for months about the Assange case. But generally around the world, the campaign to set Julian free so that he can return to his family is gathering momentum in spite of the best efforts of repulsive individuals like Mike Pompeo, who, as we know, was plotting to kill him. And the other one I want to mention is Palestine, of course. We must never forget Palestine. The number of Palestinians being killed illegally is continuing to rise on a daily basis, and yet we've had the disgusting spectacle just today, a photo opportunity of von der Leyen with the Israeli ambassador talking about shared values and peace in the Middle East and all the rest of the absolute garbage. So I'm going to always keep flying the flag here for Julian Assange and for Palestine. And it's me, Basil Ballantyne, who's been sitting in for Patrick Henningsen, saying thank you and I'll see you all again soon. Don't go away.